I'm Bex, and welcome to the Week Junior Show. I'm joined by three of the team from the Week Junior, the magazine making sense of the world for 8 to 14-year-olds. Today, we've got editor Felicity.
Hello.
Managing editor Vanessa.
Hello.
And assistant editor of the Week Junior's monthly science and nature magazine, Kieran.
Hello.
So this week, we'll be talking about a new expedition to the Titanic wreck, a toothless dinosaur, and an important new law. Plus, we'll have a debate all about wolves and their possible return to the UK. But before all of that, seeing as we'll be talking about wolves, what is everyone's favourite British mammal? Felicity, you can go first.
I was about to say a habit, and that's not a thing. It's a cross between a hare and a rabbit, and I couldn't decide, but I love hares and I love rabbits, so I think one of those, but not a habit, which is something else.
Very different thing, but I liked your explanation of it. Vanessa, how about you?
Well, I had a bit of a struggle as well, and eventually I decided to go for a harvest mouse because they're unbelievably cute. And they're also the only mice in the UK with prehensile tails, which means they can grip onto things and they can help them climb up stems of crops.
And Kieran, how about you?
I've picked the red deer, partly because they're the largest mammal that you can find on the land in the UK, and also just because they're so majestic and they really remind me of seeing them at home. So yes, the red deer.
Wow, a lot bigger than Vanessa's harvest mouse. I would go hedgehog, I think. I think I've realised hedgehog counts, right?
Yo, yes. Yeah. Good choice.
Thanks, guys. Oh, I love your backdrop there. That was excellent. If you've got a favourite British mammal, let us know. Go to PopJam at The Week Junior or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk. Or if you just want to give me a thumbs up on hedgehogs, do that as well. So tell me, what amazing fact have you all learnt this week? Felicity.
I learned that skin is the human body's largest organ, which I did not know.
How weird. Vanessa, how about you?
I learned that baby birds don't automatically know how to sing as soon as they hatch. Their parents have to teach them how to sing. I've never seen a bird having a singing lesson, but apparently this is what happens.
And Kieran, how about you?
I've got another bird fact. I learned that when emperor penguins poo, they release so much pungent gas that it can make any nearby researchers feel quite unwell and they have to go for a lie down to recover.
Wow, the poo is that smelly. That is incredible. Well done, penguins, I suppose. I wonder what they're eating. Now it's time for our real or rubbish. Kieran, what story do you have for us today?
Well, we all know that sometimes if you go for a really big weekly shop at the supermarket, it means there's a lot of bags to carry back, and that can be a bit of a pain, a bit of an annoyance. So what's happening in Pembrokeshire in Wales, particularly to help older people who maybe don't want to carry their shopping back or need to stay at home at the moment, they are able to get a bit of help from a llama. So llamas that are kept by Pembrokeshire Llamas, which is a company that normally offers people the chance to go for a walk with these animals, has decided that because no one can do this trekking at the moment, they're going to ask their llamas to help out with people's shopping instead. And so people give them their order, the llama goes with someone to the shops and carries their shopping and then brings it back to drop people off at home. And as well as obviously being nice and helpful that you don't have to go to the shops yourself, it said that also the sort of sight of seeing llamas doing grocery runs through the town is cheering people up and making them feel happy as well. But is this true or is it rubbish?
So are we saying that the llamas go into the shops with them and wander around the aisles, or do you have to tie them up outside like you tie up a dog when you take your dog down?
I think the llama's job specifically is just the delivery of the bags. So I don't think they're sort of scrolling around with a pen in one hand and the shopping list in the other. I don't think they're doing that. This is purely the deliveroo of the animal world, if you will. They are
right.
Just the delivery
okay.
drivers.
I had a lovely image of a llama just ferreting around the bread aisle, just looking for the whole meal. Right, well, I'll have a little think about that. I'll try and piece it together in my head. If you've not read your copy of the magazine yet, feel free to make your guess before the end of the show and we can find out the answer together. So now it's time for our three favourite stories from the week. Felicity, what is going on in the world?
My favourite story from this week's issue is our main home news story, and it's all about the story of two very heroic young people called Max and Kira, who've inspired politicians to change the law on organ donations in England. Might sound like a bit of a grisly topic, so let me explain more. So organ donation is when an organ or body tissue is removed from one person and given to another. So if you have a heart or kidneys and they stop working properly, that might cause you to become very unwell. But sometimes, amazingly, it's possible to take someone else's heart or kidneys or another organ and give it to the person who's unwell, and that can make them live and be healthy. And that process is known as a transplant. So what's happened this week is that the law in England has changed, and it means that anyone over the age of 18 will automatically be considered to be in favour of donating their organs after their death to help someone else. And this is a huge change, because before this, the law was known as an opt-in law, and it meant that people had to register if they did want to give their organs. And otherwise, it meant that doctors and nurses wouldn't be allowed to take someone's organs without their permission. And this is a really big change, and it means that the new law could save around 700 lives a year, because it will be assumed that when people die, they are happy to donate their organs to someone else. And the reason it's named after these two young people, Max and Kira, so it's called the Max and Kira's Law, is after Max Johnson and Kira Ball. Now, Kira tragically died in a car accident in 2017 when she was just 9 years old. But amazingly, her organs saved four people's lives, including Max, who is now 12 and very happy and healthy. So it's an incredible story and a really, really big change in the way that we're going to look after people and help them live healthy lives.
This is amazing. It's actually a subject quite close to my heart. So it's just, it seems crazy that it hasn't really happened before.
Yeah, so it's already changed in Scotland and Wales, but Northern Ireland, you would still have to give permission for your organs to be donated. So it has been a sort of steady change across the UK. But it's just really exciting that it's a new way of thinking about how we can help people who are really, really sick or unwell, basically.
So Vanessa, what have you been finding out about this week?
I've been finding out about a very famous ship called Titanic. And a court in America has given a company permission to cut into the wreck of Titanic, which is currently lying at the bottom of the North Atlantic. Now, lots of people know the story, but I'll just run through it again. The ship was built in Belfast and launched on the 2nd of April 1912. And she set off from Belfast, which is in the north of Ireland, to Southampton, then to Cherbourg, then back to Ireland, to Cove, and then she set off on her journey across the Atlantic, which was on the 11th of April. And 3 days later, just before midnight, she hit an iceberg. And very quickly, she sank. Now, lots of ships have sunk over the years, but Titanic is famous because it was billed as an unsinkable, and she sank on her maiden voyage, which is to say her very first journey. And it caught the public imagination because the ship was so luxurious, it was so big, and had such a mixture of passengers. So it had very rich and glamorous people staying in very posh rooms, and also very poor and desperate people who were sailing to America in search of a better life. It's also famous, sadly, because so many people died. Of 2,000 crew and passengers, only 706 survived in these really icy waters. Now, the wreckage of the ship wasn't found until 1985, because it's nearly 2 miles underwater in sea that is very dark and very cold, so it's not easy to explore. And it was actually found during a secret hunt for the wreckage of two American nuclear submarines that had sunk in slightly mysterious circumstances. The man who found it is called Robert Ballard, and he wanted to develop a robot submersible. This is going back a good few decades. Robot submersibles are used quite a lot nowadays, but he wanted to develop it and to go looking for the wreck of Titanic. But it was quite expensive, and the only people who had given the money was the US military, and they gave him the money because they wanted him to find their missing submarines. So Ballard thought, yes, I think it's where Titanic is lying. I'll take the money and I will go and look for the subs, but if you let me also go and look for Titanic. And the US military thought, yes, okay. So Titanic was actually lying between the wreck of these two nuclear submarines. So Robert Ballard was delighted anyway. But the wreck is falling apart because of the salt water, and there's bacteria in the water that eat the metal. and the whole hull is starting to collapse. And the company that's owned the rights to the wreck, which means they're allowed to explore it, but nobody else is. They've owned it since 1994. They've just been given permission by an American court to cut into the wreckage because they want to retrieve the telegraph machine. Now, the telegraph machine is the thing that sent and received messages between ship and shore. And the court says that this is an important part of the ship's history that might soon be lost forever. But others say that the shipwreck is, in fact, it holds the bodies of so many people that couldn't be retrieved, who died that night, and it should be treated with respect, the same sort of respect that you would treat any grave. But the court has said, no, they can drill into the wreckage and retrieve the telegraph machine.
I mean, I can't believe that we're still finding bits from it and delving into the deep for it, because it was so long ago, I thought everything had been gotten, basically.
Well, I think because it's partly the controversy about the fact that it's that it is a grave site. So there are a lot of people who feel quite unhappy about poking around in there. But the other reason is because it's so far down. It's 2 miles down. And it is very dark and very cold. And also this one company has had the rights. So you you shouldn't really be allowed to go. Other people aren't allowed to go and have a look at it. Though, in fact, there have been people sneaking in and going to have a look at it. And damage has been done to the hull because of that. But it's kind of held on in people's minds because, you know, because of the luxury and the grandeur and the beauty and the tragedy of it. So I think people are still very interested.
So, Kieran, how about you? What have you been finding out about?
I found out this week about Alaphrosaurs, which I'd never heard of before, but they are a toothless dinosaur that were related to some of the most famous dinosaur species that we know about, so the Tyrannosaurus rex and the Velociraptor. But by comparison, these were very friendly animals. They probably didn't hunt other animals. They probably just ate plants. And as I said, once they became adults, they didn't have any teeth and they just had these sharp beaks instead. But it's this incredible story that's emerged about the first ever Alaphrosaur fossil in Australia. And it was found 5 years ago, and it's taken 5 years for researchers to work out exactly what it was. But the fossil itself was found by someone who just decided to volunteer an afternoon to the Melbourne Museum for an annual fossil dig. They thought they'd just go along, give it a go, and they've ended up finding this incredible fossil that's the first of its kind to be found in Australia. So the volunteer's name was Jessica Parker, and she went to join a dig in 2015 near Cape Otway, which is in southeastern Australia. And this area is quite popular amongst fossil hunters because lots of different dinosaurs have been discovered there. Partly because the area would have once been a river where a lot of animals that might have died further inland, their bones would have been swept along the river and sort of deposited there. So there's this real mix of carnivorous, so meat-eating dinosaurs, as well as herbivores, so plant-eating dinosaurs. But the Alaphrosaur is just so interesting because it seems a very unique, I guess, is the way to describe it, sort of dinosaur. In fact, Dr. Stephen Poropat, who ended up leading the research to discover exactly what this fossil was, described Alaphrosaurs as rather bizarre. He said, the few known skulls of Alaphrosaurs show that the youngsters had teeth, but the adults lost their teeth and replaced them with a horny beak. We don't know if this is true for the Australian Alaphrosaur yet, but we might find out if we ever discover a skull. So there's hopes that that might happen. And one of the reasons that it's taken so long to discover exactly what this bone is from is because previously Alaphrosaurs have only been found in other countries, so Argentina, China, and Tanzania. Never been found in Australia before. People didn't even know that they lived there. And so when it was first discovered, experts thought that it was probably part of a flying reptile called a pterosaur. And so that was kind of what they put it down to. They thought, great, we found another pterosaur bone, fantastic. But after this 5-year study, they have now realised that actually all along it was part of the backbone of an Alaphrosaur. And hopefully more parts of the Alaphrosaur bones in Australia might turn up and we can get a better picture of exactly what they look like. But the images that have been created already based on what they think they look like are really fascinating because it just looks very odd.
I quite enjoyed that we thought we'd probably found every dinosaur possible, and still there are more ones to discover.
It's fantastic. In fact, the story that we've got alongside the Dilophosaurus story in the magazine is possibly one of my favourite prehistoric discoveries ever. And it's the discovery that in prehistoric times, so around 50 million years ago, there were saber-toothed anchovies. So while we may think today of anchovies as being tiny fish that sometimes you put on a pizza, in fact, millions of years ago, they were metre-long fish with these incredibly terrifying sort of one long curved tooth that comes down from its top jaw that it would have used to chase after other fish. So yes, as you say, always a new discovery to be had.
Let's move on to the big debate. So last week on The Debate, we chatted about whether school pupils should wear their uniforms at home. And here's what some of you had to say.
Yes, well, we've had so many responses to last week's debate. So thank you to everyone for getting in touch. Elliot, age 12, emailed to say, I think that people should wear school uniform because many people, including myself, will concentrate more in class and even in important tests. I think that school uniform is very useful as a tool for concentration and a way for people to show pride in their school badge. Now, Hannah disagreed. She wrote, I don't think we should have to wear them at home because my uniform A is uncomfortable and B, I don't like skirts. I find it easier to concentrate in my own clothes.
Olivia, age 10, also emailed us and she said, I think you should wear uniforms because it's still a school day, but at home instead, and it makes the school look more professional and smart. It also makes it feel like I'm working hard at school. Sam could see both sides of the debate, writing, I think that maybe people should, but shouldn't at the same time. Wearing a uniform at home would make people get used to wearing it when they get back to school. But when they're in their uniform, people might not feel comfortable in their house. It's a tricky one, Sam.
Yeah, Mia, aged 11, got in touch. She said, no, I don't think we need to wear school uniform whilst homeschooling because it's very unnecessary. And for some students, their uniforms might be uncomfortable and they might not want to wear them. Charlie added, I think that children should be allowed to wear what they like at home because we are allowed to wear what we like while doing homework. However, I also agree with the fact that you don't have to think about what to wear in the morning, as you might get behind on schoolwork if you take too long deciding. And that is true. I was late to this podcast because I couldn't decide what to wear. So I'm with Charlie on this one.
I knew that would be a very difficult topic. I knew that that would have lots of conversation points there. So thank you so much to everybody who got in touch. As you heard, this is your chance to get involved. If you want to even hear your voice on the podcast, all you've got to do is grab a grown-up, record what you think of this week's debate and send it in to us. Just email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk and we could play it on next week's show. So this week, we're asking whether wolves should be reintroduced into the wild. Who can tell me a little bit more?
I can tell you a little bit more, Bex. So the wolves are creeping ever closer to the shores of this country. For the first time in 100 years, a wolf has been spotted in a village in Normandy in northern France. Now, wild wolves, the numbers of them have been growing in Europe since the 1990s. And actually, they live in the wild in lots of countries, including France, Germany, Italy, and Latvia, and they're protected by law. But interestingly, I didn't know this, that wolves used to roam in the wild in Britain, and the last one, it's thought, died at least 277 years ago in Scotland. So we've had them before, but now some people want to bring them back as part of a plan to restore our natural habitats to the way they once were. Wolves are what is known as an apex predator, which means that they're top of the food chain, which is very cool. And by hunting plant-eating animals below them in the food chain, they can have a huge effect on the environment around them.
Okay, so this is a really interesting one. To be honest, part of me, I think, thought we already had wolves, but obviously that was incredibly wrong. So Kieran and Vanessa, you are against each other today. You've got a minute each on the clock. Do you have a timer nearby, both of you?
Yes, which I'll ignore.
Okay, excellent. Good to know. So Kieran, I'm going to get my timer up as well so I can be sure, mostly for Vanessa, let's face it. So whenever you're ready, you can argue for this motion.
Yes, well, I want to tell a story about one of my favourite scientific studies ever. And this is the fact that in 1995, a pack of wolves were reintroduced into the Yellowstone National Park in the US, which is a huge patch of wilderness that had been home to wolves up to 70 years prior, and then they'd gone extinct there. And during that 70 years that they weren't there, the landscape changed dramatically. Because there was no apex predator, the number of deer and elk rapidly increased, and these herds munched their way through too many young trees. And as a result, there were less trees for songbirds to live in, there was less wood for beavers to be able to use to build their dams. As a result of that, the rivers through the park changed direction without the beavers' dams to guide them. And with fewer trees providing shade in the water, cold water fish populations also dropped. And then within 20 years of the wolves being reintroduced, this all changed back again, and the natural landscape returned to its former glory. And that is what would happen in the UK if we were to get our wolves back once more.
Wow, that was under a minute, and I was very worried for you. I was like, how long is this story going to last? Oh my goodness. But you know what? You absolutely smashed that. I was very impressed. Different approach for a debate as well, to have a little story for the whole thread of it. So Vanessa, no pressure, but you have to argue against Kieran's lovely story there. Take it away when you're ready.
Those are very strong arguments from Kieran, but I just think that modern Britain isn't big enough for wolves. A wolf pack can have a range of up to 1,000 square miles. I think we have to be reasonable with this. Yes, we should share our space with wild animals. I mean, I think the reintroduction of beavers and otters is great. And lots of birds have been brought back, such as red kites. And it's fascinating to see how the ecosystems readjust to the new arrivals. Yes, returning the landscape to its wild state is a good thing to aim for. But I just wonder how far you would go. In the distant past, the valleys were full of thick forest and dangerous marshes. Do we want to go that far back? The trouble is that wolves are a top predator and they need to eat. If we have wolves roaming around, sheep and calves will be attacked and angry farmers will start hunting wolves again. I say let's leave these magnificent animals to countries that have forests and mountains where they can roam far from human society.
Wow, that was well under... wow, Vanessa, I'm shocked. I'm shocked at, you know, obviously how great the debate was, but also that was like 53, 54 seconds. Wow.
I'm scarred by experience. Also, Kieran sent me a really sour little note this morning saying 60 seconds, Vanessa. So in your face, Kieran, crushing argument and in under a minute.
I've
got to say. Felicity, what is your opinion on this?
I think Vanessa has persuaded me. I think she's brought me back down to reality because I was thinking, yeah, wolves, that would be so cool. And even the kind of boggy marshes she was talking about, I was like, brilliant, let's change this country and go back to having like crazy animals everywhere. But then I was thinking about it and actually, you know what, I think wolves do need to be in bigger countries with more space to roam around. So I think I'm with Vanessa on this one.
So I'm fascinated by what our listeners think of this. Let us know. Go respond to the poll at theweekjunior.co.uk/poll or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk to get involved. So now it's time to recap our real or rubbish story. Kieran, can you just remind me of it, please?
Yes, this is the phenomenon sweeping Pembrokeshire and Wales, where llamas are being brought in to deliver grocery shopping to the elderly residents who are staying at home at the moment. So instead of going to the shops, they get a llama to do it for them.
Well, I find the story pretty alarming, but I am going to say... Yeah, that
excellent
punctuation of that. That sigh from Kieran, I can hear it from my lot. I love the story, and I want it to be true. I'm gonna say it's rubbish. That's my final answer. I'm gonna say it's rubbish.
Okay, could I get a drum roll, please? It's real.
No!
Yes. It's quite surprising, isn't it? Yeah, so llamas have been delivering shopping to elderly people in Pembrokeshire. They do have the help of a human who shows them where to go. And my favourite quote from this is one resident who received a delivery from a llama said, "Shopping in the old days was miserable, wasn't it? It looks great fun these days." Which I just think is very nice.
Yeah, it is pretty funny if you've got a llama to help you. I can't believe that was real. Oh my goodness, I'm furious. Right, anyway, I believe you guys have a little competition you want to tell us about.
We do indeed. Are you a tech whiz with lots of creative ideas?
Do you want to make a difference in the world?
Well, the BT Young Pioneer Award is hosting a competition to find the brightest young technology talent in the UK. Your task is to invent a piece of technology that will help solve a problem that matters to you.
The Young Pioneer Award aims to discover amazing ideas from young people that tackle the issues they care about the most, from loneliness caused by the coronavirus lockdown to the damaging effects of climate change.
The lucky winner will receive help to develop their idea with up to £10,000 in funding and the support of BT experts along the way.
To submit your award entry and for the full terms and conditions, visit tech4goodawards.com, and the four is the number four, so tech4goodawards.com. The BT Young Pioneer Award is open to anyone based in the UK between the ages of 9 and 18. Entry is free and you can enter as an individual or as part of a group of up to 5 people. The closing date for entries is the 30th of June. Good luck.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks, guys. That's pretty much it for the Week Junior show this week. Drop us a comment on Pop Jam at the Week Junior or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk if you want to get in touch. And don't forget to rate, review and subscribe wherever it is you get your podcasts. Bye.
If you want to get your hands on a copy of the Week Junior magazine, we're offering a 6-week free trial. To get yours, head over to dennismags.co.uk/theweekjunior and use the code PODCAST.